Probably won't do much regarding Santa Anita, but the San Luis Rey tomorrow, the grade three, United leads that short field. But things pretty much now kind of reserving for Santa Anita Derby Day in 2 weeks. Who was it yesterday? Was it Haskin talking about how things are just they're flying by like line drives, right? Any other? Let's see. Mount. I should mention that Mahoning Valley's got a little stake tomorrow too. The Southern Park for $75,000, and I think that's everything. Otherwise, yeah, we took care of Sam Houston, and that's it. All right, the rest of it we'll deal with in detail. I should also mention that Rich Eng yesterday, if you just listened to Rich from the Thursday replay, Sabarano with Johnny Wong in the fourth at Golden Gate, just 560, but you know what? What's wrong with that? If you had $2, you could turn it into 560. That actually, you know, in that small field, that was okay. That was, almost 2-1 was okay on that horse. So good job by Rich. I think that's everything. Yeah, all right. 7 minutes away from the first at Cheltenham. Want to thank, probably the last chance I'll get to thank Kev Humphreys again. And Kev, in 2 weeks, is going to have Dubai World Cup analysis too. All right. So thanks to Kev. And yesterday had that one pop and came back with that, what was it? Mrs. Miniver. It wasn't Mrs. Miniver. but he had a nice pop yesterday, and he wants to hopefully close out Cheltenham strong. All right? We'll reach for Marcus Hirsch and start with Marcus. And I know he's got a tight agenda today, so we'll get Marcus's thoughts. And let me pull out the Fairgrounds action. I did, this morning, I wanted to get through the maiden races. And, because the tendency is to concentrate on the, the back half of the card. You got that all stakes pick five that starts with the Benson. That'll prove very popular, I think, for players tomorrow. The Benson, the New Orleans, the Muniz, and then the Oaks and the Derby. Pretty nice all stakes pick five. But those maiden races, there's a number, in addition to Alejandro, the Rachel's Valentina Curlin, for Stone Street. There's plenty of pedigree on parade in those four maiden special weights. And there's a nice variety. Two of them are three quarters, and then there's one on the grass going a mile where Judmont has Snowhouse. This is a pretty nice female family of Judmonts. And I also noticed the horse. Joe Sharp's got a horse called Winworthy. That might be okay. There's the dam caught my eye on the turf. So the maiden races are good, but we're going to talk mostly about the stakes action. Marcus Hirsch joins us from the Daily Racing Forum. Marcus, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I'm hearing Winworthy is not special.
I love that.
Might turn out to be okay, but. I talked to as many people as I could about their first-time starters.
Nice.
And, people, were lying to me left and right, I'm sure. Because that's what happens when you're a turf writer. Just get deceived over and over again. It's a lifetime of being deceived. And that's all right.
No comment.
I did tell Sharp about a couple of his horses. He said he's okay. And then offer a big push for whatever that's worth.
That's funny. All right. Well, I appreciate it.
He does like his run happy in the dirt sprint.
Interesting. That since we went in this direction, which surprises me. Yeah, that one.
Mr. Sippy.
Mr. Sippy, who gets first Lasix after a couple of two-year-old tries at Ellis and Kentucky Downs. That's interesting. Yeah. Out of Mississippi Queen, the Artie Schiller mare.
Big old colt who just was, wasn't quite meant to be a two-year-old. His Joe said his last couple of works have been really excellent, very promising. But I mean, the Tulane Twist is going to take all kinds of beating if he. And if he runs his race, that, I think that horse is good. I did report that the trainer, he was entered and scratched March 4th, and Cherie DeVoe said that he had a little abscess, which was just bad timing since taken care of, as you can see by his work pattern. And I thought he just got a little bit tired at the end of that race after looming boldly. The race got a big number. He's in charge, didn't really flatter anyone coming back. He ran okay. I mean, he was representative, running behind the fast. Called Blameworthy.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, this race, I've been saying all winter that it's a better group, and I think I've said it on your show, a better group of 2-year-olds of 20, 23-year-olds of 2021 than I have ever seen in my, whatever it is, 20 years or so, covering fairgrounds. And that continues to be the case. This race is perfectly representative of this. I mean, if compared to, like, some other venues, winter venues running a race like this, there are more like promising horses who have already run pretty good numbers and look like they have capabilities than, it's so different than it used to be to me.
And, Tom Amos was on with me early in the week, and he's got that Wild for Wycliffe in this race, the Danza colt.
He can also run, yeah.
Right. Right. And he admitted that Cherie's horse, the Tulane Trist, was clearly the horse to beat. But then when I went through this, Cool House, that was a decent debut. The Larry Best Nyquist colt for Cox.
Yeah, he's okay.
And Continental Coins looks like he's okay.
He might be okay. He could improve.
Yeah.
I think don't sleep on Bedwin Fighter either.
Wow, the Sumaya, the war front.
It was a buyback for like $920,000 or something.
Oh, I remember that. Yes. Look at you.
And I was out there. I was in New Orleans last weekend to watch these horses. And
right.
I was, it was later, it was a few sets after the break. I can't remember. But anyway, it wasn't right after training started or right after the break. A few sets in, and it was getting kind of quiet, and because that was Sunday, and Sunday was much quieter. Saturday was madhouse, and so it wasn't a lot of workers, and the workers that were working didn't look like special horses. And then this horse comes chunking along, like that doesn't look like one of the horses actually working. Because he won 38 and change, but you could just see, war fronts can be super attractive animals. And he stood out just coming down the lane at a moderate clip. So I think he might have some talent too. But just adding more confusion. I mean, this race to me, I want to just kind of single Tulane Trist in a way because I really think that
right. He's
meant to win. And I think I'm probably going to end up going that way, even though he had that little hiccup. The little hiccup doesn't have me thrilled. You want it to just be like straightforward, which it really is with horses. But if you don't just single him, then I think you end up digging pretty darn deep in there.
I got to ask you, Marcus, since we talked about the maidens, before we talk about the major stakes, let's go to the second for a minute. And
okay.
The mile and a 16th, where you've got Alejandro in here. However, Dolder Grand keeps knocking on the door, nipped by the Pletcher ship in Sainthood, who rallied back.
After he had the race won, yeah.
I know. Then you've got the likes of Crosscheck for Brendan Walsh. This is a half to Avery Island. People forget Avery Island. It was a Withers Nashua winner. And then on the rail, how about the debuting Asmussen for Three Chimneys? That name, the dam, jumped off the page at me. That was Leah Giamatti's really nice Wonder Gal.
Good horse. Yeah, for sure.
Right?
Let me see. Brendan Walsh did say his horse, Crosscheck, is set to he thinks he's going to run so much better. He was off slowly. just kind of ran around there behind a slow pace last time. Blinkers on. Alejandro, I know it says stumbled break. I didn't think that was a huge excuse last time. He was also first Lasix. He showed a little bit of a flash later in his race against Cattle River in Kentucky. I'm just not quite seeing it with him. Road Bible asked me something. Clairiere won, going first time out. Debuting at two turns is what I'm trying to say. Debuting in a rep. That's not a huge move for Askewson, and I don't love him when that barn does that. He started doing it more, which is fine. I just think that it says something about the capabilities of the horse in question. Road Bible was made 3-1 on the line. That's a short price. As I've said before, the line maker also does clocking, so you can tell something from who's been looking good in works by the lines on these first-time starters. Embarrassingly, in a way, I think I picked Cool Rags to win this race. And he looks like a habitual maiden, but if you go back to all his races, he has plenty of excuses. He's only been on Lasix two times. His trip on January 16th was absolutely impossible. He ran very well, considering. And then last time, they managed to spring the gate. It was really not a good move by the starter, I'm sorry. The horse had his head pointed straight down and was obviously unprepared, and they popped it, and he didn't figure out what happened next. He made a good run into a slow pace there, too. I just think it's two races, two turns with Lasix suggests that I'm going to ignore all the two-year-old form and hope that he can stay closer, because there's really not much speed in this race that I can see.
You did pick Cool Rags. Neil Pessin's colt, Happy American, is going to win at some point as well. This is what made this card so good was, we knew the stakes were going to be the stakes. Then you fill in these spots, and it really enhances the whole afternoon. And of course, things open with, I imagine, Australasia is going to be what, 30 cents on the dollar?
Well, they made her 2-5.
Apparently, look at that, 2-5. How about that?
Line.
Yeah.
I mean, I was ever so tempted to try to beat her because it's just so different going on a route at Delta than a route at Fairgrounds. So even though she's won at a mile, the horse No Parole, who's running later on this card, run going a mile at Delta. He's not a cheap kind of horse. I mean, it's an eighth of a mile home stretch. It actually really helps horses that don't want to go that far, that have talent, because they just sprint into the stretch and open up and the race is over. No one can catch them. That said, I mean, this is an unusually fast lawbred. She worked inside Travel Column on Saturday, and I'm not saying that she won that work by any stretch of the imagination. But, in the end, even taking into account the longer stretch and my slight concern, I couldn't pick against her.
No. All right. Let's turn to our stakes action, and we'll work backwards from the 14th, and we'll do the five races that'll be the all-stakes pick five. Marcus, kind of novel to have the LeCompte and Risen Star contingent, pretty much go forward, and they're kind of exchanging blows in the middle of the ring, and then we've got a little bit of interloping potentially from a horse like Run Classic, and then the invading Hot Rod Charlie. What's your La Derby take?
Yeah, I think it's the three top Louisiana horses and those two other horses. That's the race to me. I mean, no offense to the other connections, and you never know, but I think that's the heart of it. A bird's eye kind of view down on things is I still think that because Louisiana males have not done that well, in the Kentucky Derby, there continues to be this skepticism about these three horses. And maybe it will turn out to be warranted, but I'm going to go the Occam's Razor route here. They've run fast numbers on multiple number maker speed figures. They have separated themselves in these races from the horses behind them to a great extent. And if you see these horses in person, they absolutely look the part of classic prospects. So, I mean, to me, all the evidence that I have points to them being a legitimate trio. I think that my feeling is that Midnight Bourbon, while he is a gorgeous horse with a lot of ability, I'm not sure that he's going to be quite with the other two. And maybe they're just not going to beat Mandalo. I mean, that's possible. Giroux got after him like a couple of times periodically in the stretch, but he was basically handwriting him the last, you know, 70 yards in the Risen Star. And the horse seemed to have plenty left. I do think that he's a great candidate for this kind of race. He's just got a strong gallop that he's been able to maintain. Even before they put blinkers on, he was starting to get more focused. I think that, you know, those two races in Kentucky were a great foundation for a horse that probably wants to really stay and gallop strongly in long dirt races. Just from seeing the horse last weekend, he seems to be in great shape. I mean, he seems happy and healthy, super fit, traveling nicely. I don't have any knocks on him really right now.
Mm.
But I did it. I picked Proxy to beat him just because of I think he's going to be more value. And Proxy to me is a very interesting horse. I mean, he has a great pedigree. He's really tall, has a long stride. I don't have any question about him staying either. I didn't like this horse going into the LeCompte, even though he'd won two in a row, because he was running slow and he was just barely getting it done against questionable competition. But with the benefit of hindsight, after his LeCompte and Risen Star, and going back and watching his entire career, you can see it developing there all along, from his very first race in Monmouth, where he was in trouble almost the whole trip, and when he finally shook free, he came with a pretty impressive run for a two-year-old going a two-turn mile, first time in his career. And then he's immature and doesn't have his mind on racing yet, because he shies from the crop. He shies from his opponents, which he did with Matt. Like, he wanted to run away from the Risen Star. He ran in spurts in that race, dropped the bridle at the half-mile pole, had to be urged. Then he came with a big run in upper stretch, and I still don't think he fully applied himself after he reached contention. So blinkers can make a huge difference for Proxy. They really could. Maybe they won't. But if you recall this barn, Michael Stidham, Mystic Guide, was a horse who showed talent last year. They added blinkers to him in midsummer, and it changed his career. It put him to a new level. People talk, you know, you'll look here, you see, I don't have the formulator open, so I don't have the exact numbers, but just our general trainer stats numbers in the racing form, we're showing 7% first blinkers for Stidham. But you got to think about, like, the greater context of what blinkers mean. With a lot of times, you know, a guy like Stidham who gets a lot of young horses, maybe not the first, you know, he's trying to sort through horses for people who are hoping that the horses can improve and stay in main special weights or get somewhere, right? So they experiment a lot. Blinkers is one experiment that you might want to try, and a horse is not showing much before you drop them. So think about horses like that where it's just, okay, we got to give him a chance. Let's see what happens, but he's probably not very good anyway. You know, there are a lot of circumstances where if you don't go through the individual horses and see the context for using blinkers, I don't think you're going to get a true read. I really liked seeing that the last good young horse that they put blinkers on really moved up, and I think this horse could do the same.
Hmm. Any opportunity for, you know, one of the upstarts, specifically Run Classic, who...
Well, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean... I like him, and he's got some numbers are better than others. Some numbers look really good in this race. He was I picked him and bet on first time out when he probably should have won. He got really literally run into on the backside, and then he was, you know, the single for me. I managed to hit the pick five both of those cards. He would have been a lot better on the 16th of January had he won instead of Blameworthy. But he ran a very nice race against You talked about Patton's horse, Happy American. He was third. Al Stahl, Cash Rocket, that horse is okay. That was not a bad field, and he kind of buried them late, galloped out strongly. This horse, the dam was like a Louisiana-bred five-furlong horse. Okay, but, I mean, pedigree only goes so far. If you see the horse himself, he stands over a lot of ground. He has a big, long stride. I saw one of his gallops. He looked like he was doing really well. I think under the right circumstances, he could stay, but, I mean, this is kind of a lot to ask. You know, going from that nice maiden win over a mile in the 16th to run against some really tough horses, way tougher than he's met, going two turns, while stretching out to a mile and 3/16. I'm not ruling out the possibility that he could do it, but I think it's a big ask. Hot Rod Charlie, I wanted to be, like, totally against with confidence, which I thought I was going to be, but I do give – I understand why some people like this horse. He has his works recently have been a lot better. He does seem to have matured and improved in the morning. I thought, you know, even though he was in the 12 in the Breeders' Cup, he ended up getting a pretty good trip there, and I thought he got a good run into it. Things went his way. And then, his Lewis was fine. If you're just looking at it as a jumping-off point, this is another horse where Blinker seemed to have turned his career around. As soon as they put blinkers on, I mean, he was 6-5 first time out at Del Mar. This is a horse that people liked all along. He just got good when they added blinkers, and he got some racing because he was just running in place those first three races. And he might be good enough on pedigree. He's supposed to run worth going an extra furlong. But again, pedigree is a rough guide, and individuals go outside of the pedigree box all the time. So I can't rule him out. But I ended up, I'm just siding against him. If he wins, it's not going to be a shock to me, and it means he's a good horse, and the California horses are pretty good. But you can't pick them all.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a nice group, and there's some horses here that are going to be right. They're going to be down the chart, and some are going to turn back. I suppose Obisos might end up being a 7/8 type long term, and
I think that's a pretty good forecast, Steve.
And Dallas, Dallas has loved the Starring in My Dreams from the opening bell. So this is a nice cast, and some of these horses are going to be buried in the chart tomorrow, and they're going to end up going on to nice careers anyway. This should be fun. Amos echoed what you said about going back to the discussing those maidens and big group of maidens. Amos said that he felt the same way. Cassie too, I think, has said this year that this is a better group of males at Fairgrounds than there has been. And that, we went this whole conversation about the Louisiana Derby and didn't even talk about the distance adjustment, out to the 9.5 furlong. So, this is a real test, and should hold up, heading toward Kentucky. Talk about the Oaks, Marcus, because I know we're going to get short on time.
Yeah. I mean, I'm taking the position that while Travel Column and Clarier are nice horses, they don't look that fast to me, and I'm hoping that. Well, I like Obligatory best, like her quite a lot, but I think that Amos's horse, Little Tootsie, is also capable. So I'm hoping that one of those two can upset the two from the Rachel Alexandra, and I don't think that's unrealistic.
Interesting. Where's the speed coming from in your mind?
Well, I know that Little Tootsie is going to be more forwardly placed.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I assume Travel Column is going to lead. She's got plenty of speed. Outside draw. Zagel is stretching out from sprint on the rail, so she could show a little speed, too. I don't think it'll be a fast pace.
Neither do I.
I mean, why can't Obligatory be close, too? I mean, she comes out of a one-turn mile where she didn't break well from the rail. She also didn't break well first time out, which I guess is a little bit of a concern. But I loved her race last time. She showed to me like serious, like A-level ability. And I think, you know, dig deeper in her pedigree. She's got a ton of state. I think that the route is going to be great. And then I looked up Mott's numbers with these horses going from, I'll give you the stat I wrote. I think this was in Weekend Game Plan. It's three-year-olds going from a maiden win to a stakes race on dirt in routes. I think he's won his last five, including Candyman Rocket in the Sam Davis. But the last five horses doing that have won. I mean, and it's also longer term, the numbers. Like, my point in looking it up was, like, you know, these people, like, Mott gets this reputation, and he's got, obviously, he's going to be a great judge of talent, and he's fairly conservative in a lot of ways, and if he takes a shot like that, you know, it's for a good reason. And it seems like the sort of thing where he might be able to poke holes in it, but it's just the opposite. He's been phenomenal. Obviously, you know, he's not going to win every such race for the rest of his life, but the numbers are there to back up this move for sure. Another one that won like that was, I'm blanking on his name. He won the Risen Star last year. He just ran back at Tampa. Anyway, we can move along. And I think Obligatory is a good filly, and I think she's going to race competitively. Lil Tootsie is really impressed in her sprint race. I thought her route race was a little unusual on how far back she was. She won anyway. Just on pedigree, she should probably be better up to a mile, but she's shown an ability to get two turns. I've heard she might really shine when she gets cut back at some point, but I do think with a forward placement in this field, she's going to be fast enough.
Talk about the Muniz, the mile and the eighth, and Pixelate draws out wide. Yeah, big, bulky field, interesting group. Yeah.
I mean, if you maybe, you know, you either – I think you either, like, just lean completely on Colonel Liam because you think he's, like, a brick-and-mortar type in the making, or I think he's going to be much lower than 3-1, which is morning line odds. Or, you know, you can get prices on a lot of horses in here. I mean, factor this, he's probably second choice. You know, he did – his last race wasn't as bad as it looks because the track was very demanding. They won a good pace, and Spectacular Gem was hounding him the entire way. The fact is, though, that Spectacular Gem, the other pace horse, finished right behind Factor This in sixth. It's not like Factor This put away the other speed who completely collapsed under the weight of the pressure. You know, it wasn't that. I just think, you know, the horse is six. His 2020 campaign was so phenomenal, also so much more than he'd ever done before. I just don't think he's ever going to get back to that. Of course, you know, he could easily prove me wrong. If he gets an easy lead coast out there on that fresh ground along the that's going to be opened up, if they're on the turf today, it'll be the first day today with the 10th rail bound. But I can't get too excited about him at the price. I mean, this is one of those take-your-pick races because, you know, I think you can make a case for nearly every horse in the race. I really do.
Now, certainly from an exotic standpoint, you can play around with any number of horses, and there's going to be some very attractive prices. I'll tell you who has moved forward and is going to be, you know, one of the longer shots on the board, and I think might get lost in here, was Peace Achieved. It's 20-1.
Peace Achieved.
Yeah.
That's like the one horse. There are two horses I didn't see winning, and that's one.
I'm not saying necessarily win, but if you're building tickets and you want a horse that, you know, is probably going to be, 25, 28 to 1.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I can't rule it out. His last two were somewhat encouraging after he didn't show a lot coming back last summer. I'm not going to argue against him getting into the trifecta. I suppose that's entirely possible. I mean, I don't know how much the wet turf moved him up or hurt him last time, but he did run a better race.
What about Pixelate 8-1?
Yeah, I toyed with him. I definitely considered him. There is a long run to the first turn for him to get over, but I still don't love the draw. I could see him coming late over the top and being effective. I mean, I ended up picking Captivating Moon to win. I know the thought was that the soft ground helped him in the fairgrounds, but my second thought was, what if it was just getting back on turf? If you look at the career arc of his numbers, he was strictly a turf horse early. He ran in the Arlington Million once because he had, and he wasn't, you know, he wasn't a prominent contender, but he had earned his way there by running good races, races fast enough to make a dent in this spot. I understand how the dirt thing started. He was running well on dirt. He won, you know, he ran well. He looked like he was doing fine on dirt, but I just feel like maybe they got a little off course with that. And this was a turf horse all along. I mean, he's bred to be a turf horse. You know, he beat a similar group, minus Colonel Liam, in the fairgrounds. And we've seen all the time that when a horse does well in one of the fairgrounds turf route stakes, they often do well in two of them. I mean, that happened earlier this year with Logical Myth, who had an excellent winter at fairgrounds. He ran a good race himself in the fairgrounds after winning a couple of stakes races.
It's a really engaging group, and I just because it's Rosario, I do want to point out that Conviction Trade, Mike Maker, and you know, took him a long way in the Connolly before Spooky Channel overcame, and the presence of Rosario just scares me, and I always take note, and 15-1.
Yeah, I just can't see that horse. Like, I think he's going to get outfooted late, going a mile and an eighth. I mean, I think he wants to go a long way, but he is in good form. Spooky Channel's not out of the question.
Nope.
In this spot either, and neither is this horse. Two Emmys for Hugh Robertson. I wouldn't sleep on him at all. He's going to be right up behind, right behind the speed. He loves the fairgrounds. He's got some hidden form with some trouble trips. He beats this horse, Darain, that's being talked up as a real, you know, graded stakes horse for Qatar Racing two races ago. And he's run well every time he set foot on the fairgrounds grass course. He'll probably be 30-1.
A tremendous respect for Mac and Hugh Robertson. And, in fact, of course, last week it was Mac that authored the 47-1 upset with that Carlos L. Crazy.
I cannot believe it. That was not an illogical horse. I completely overlooked that horse.
Nope.
Going back, I wish I had I could get a mulligan on that one.
I hear you. Marcus, let's quickly get, because I know you've got to head out of the house, the New Orleans and the Benson, and the return of Roadster, which nobody had on their bingo card.
Well, I knew it was coming back. I didn't know it was coming back in this spot. I am so clueless in this race. I hate races with relatively short. I mean, Captivating Moon is almost certainly coming out, so we're going to have a field of seven. You could spend probably the rest of the day just trying to figure out who's going to make the lead in this race, and you probably would be wrong. I probably would be wrong, and I have no idea who could possibly lead. Who's going to lead? Owendale? Roadster? Do you want Roadster leading, going a mile and an eighth, first time out in 2 years? Okay, not 2 years. A year. Roadster did have a big work the other day. If Stidham were able to get him back to his best numbers, you know, from his heyday, he'd be be formidable. But I mean, he's 3-1 on the line. I can take 3-1 on him. Owendale. I mean, Owendale. His credit was too far inside on that big outside track at Oaklawn on February 27th. I think that made him look worse. But I mean, Silver Prospector was even farther inside. He kind of cut the corner. He took the worst of it, and he still beat him. This horse is showing some tendencies of, you know, he's got a lot of talent. It's just, is he going to express it? Enforceable ran huge, two back, bounced to the moon in the mine shaft. He could be a bounce back candidate. I could see somebody take a shot at him or with Chess Chief. I went with Sonneman. I hope they ride him forwardly. He gets out and is at least close early. He's on a decent pattern, ran pretty well behind Maxfield last time. He can't fall too far behind. I think if he manages to get out of the gate and get in the vanguard He's in good enough form, and he's got enough stage for him that he could win a narrow decision over a shorter priced Overdale. But Ondale is obviously, you know, the most likely winner, I suppose.
I'm glad you mentioned Chest. Well, I just want to say, and I'll bring it up with Frank. Frank McGoey is going to join us next, and Chess Chief interests me with the addition of Luis Saez. And if he and Dallas discuss how to approach this race, and Louis uses, you know, he has shown in those allowance races earlier in the meet, he can be forwardly placed. And in Luis Saez's hands, that's a dangerous, dangerous gambit. And that's what
I think, like, when I was talking about figuring out who's going to make the lead, that could be everything. If you get the horse who is able to take advantage, you might be on the right one. Or you might not.
The Benson starts the pick five, and these are, of course, the fillies and mares going the mile and a 16th on the grass course.
Well, this is a rough one, isn't it?
It's fun. There's another good one. Yeah.
Please, this is tough. my pick, and I like her, is Joy Epifora. I think she's going to win the Albert M. Stahl Memorial. She ran up on the heels of tiring pace center His Glory, and Mena Andalika had plenty of horse to keep her from getting out. He boxed her in there, and she got completely stymied. She was going better than Andalika at the time. She was a Group 1 level horse in Argentina, had a very encouraging U.S. debut behind Lady Kate, who's a good horse, last summer, and then she just kind of floundered from there. Although, I will say, her grass race at Saratoga might have been better than it looks on paper. I think she's got a chance to move forward, and if she gets a clean run, I think she can win at a big number.
Nice. Nice.
Here are the others I would consider.
I have not looked at this as closely as I needed to. I did not go back to it after the first go-round. So, all right. That one I've got to, when it comes to the writing up the pick five. Marcus, I thought so too, Casey. Yeah, Casey said he thinks either Marcus hung up or got disconnected. But either way, I know he's got to leave the house, and so we'll leave it there with Marcus Hirsch. Marcus, thank you, and it should be really fun. We're going to actually stay with Fairgrounds coverage, and Frank McGoey is going to join us here in a minute. And in fact, I think Frank is standing by. Good morning.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Frank, I'm great. How was your St. Patrick's?
It was good. It was good. I mean, it came at in a very busy week, as you would like to say. We're right in the middle of we're right in the horse racing hamster wheel this week. So things are moving fast and furious. You know what I mean?
Well, the meet, you know, with the meet coming to a close, that's usually the slap in the face, you know, that the calendar is whistling by.
I can't believe how fast this whole year went by. I remember sending you a text about a month and a half into the pandemic when everybody started locking down, just telling you thanks for giving me some sanity. And I was talking to somebody earlier, and I said, you know, I said we were lucky in the horse racing game because we had a vaccine from the start. We had a sanity vaccine. It was called horse racing. It kept us sane. I would have gone nuts if I didn't have horse racing this past year.
So, agreed.
I feel
agreed.
Very lucky. And like everything else that's good in my life, I can attribute it to horse racing.
Now, nicely put, and true for so many that are tuning in. And, you know, we look at what we've got tomorrow, 14 race card, and, you know, quite a bit of state bred action, too. Some state bred stakes and a state bred maiden. We've got open company maidens, long and short, male and female. And then the graded stakes action that culminates.
It looks fun.
You right?
Yeah, really looks like a fun card. No doubt about it.
I'm going to ask you somewhat the same way I started with Marcus, because I don't want to concentrate too much on the, you know, the non-stakes. But any maiden thoughts, anything that you've been seeing in the mornings you like?
I haven't been out as much this morning, this year in the mornings as I have in the past for a couple of reasons. Don't ask me why, but at the age of 56, Steve, I decided to sell a house and buy a new house and move in the last 6 weeks. It's been all the torture that comes with it, I deserve it. So that and the fact that they weren't letting people inside the grandstand this year unless you were an official clocker. So with the weather, I was like, I'm not going to sit out on the steps and you know, for that long a time. So I haven't been out that much. But fortunately, I'm very good friends with Mike Diliberto, the head clocker there. And
sure.
I had a nice conversation with him yesterday. And I will give this as a little a tip to Fairgrounds players. Mike is a good handicapper. He's a good clocker. And he might be the most honest guy in the world. If I was head clocker, I would probably be in jail or have a contract out of my life if I got to make the morning line too, you know? So when you see Mike lay a first-time starter at reasonably short odds, it means it's an educated opinion. He knows that there's going to be money showing for the horse because he's seen him. So keep that in mind. And he's very good at what he does. So with that in mind, I'm just skimming through. So the second race is an interesting race. I don't know if Mark has touched on the Asmussen Horse Road Bible, but apparently he's talented, but has had some serious gait issues in the morning. The last three furlong work, he needed to get his gait card, and from what Mike was telling me, it was basically they just popped him out of the gate and you know, wrapped him up real quick. But he's supposed to be okay mentally if he can put it together, but I think it's a very tough race. I've got a little bit of a sentimental pull moving on to the first Louisiana bred race, the second race. My buddy Eddie Johnson's got the two, who Eddie's having some health problems this year, and he's a really good guy, and I'm pulling for him, and I know they're high on this horse. And he happened to, first time he worked, he thought he needed company out of the gate. He happened to catch a Yapon out of the gate and hung with him for a while, but then came back and worked on his own, on his next gate work, and did well. So I'm pulling for him. And I think he'll give a good representation of himself in that state bred race. I'm sure Calhoun's tough. I don't know anything about their horse in there.
Let me just interject. The horse we're talking about in that second race, it's funny you brought it up out of hand. That's a half to Shang, who
yes.
People might remember was a very good going
Louisiana
back. Right, quite a while ago, I think. And it's interesting to me that Cassius King bought this horse for $52,000, and pretty interesting that
Eddie's had a long relationship with them.
How about that?
For years, a long time, like before Fleet Alex, when he went back that long. As you know, Eddie's a lot like me, Steve. Eddie was a civilian too. He had a civilian job. He was a janitorial sales guy, like the head sales guy for a janitorial company. But his first passion was horse racing. And when I first met Eddie, was out at Jefferson Downs. He used to have a couple of horses for himself and run it at the night tracks. And then as time progressed, he got more into the horses and passed on the business side of things to his son. But Eddie's been he was dealing with the Cassius King guys for years.
How about that? Chuck Zachney, of course, and sending this one to Eddie. And Eddie, if I'm not mistaken, a regular at Venezia.
Yeah. And he's having some health issues this year. And, you know, it's last time I was at the track, it's really nice to see how everybody pitches in and is helping him this year.
Nice.
I was sitting with him outside the paddock, and Ron Fauchet was in there saddling his horse for him. And I've seen a number of guys helping out. So everybody's pitching in to help Eddie.
Well, and on that same topic, you know, yesterday I reached out to get Gary Shearer on, and Merrill is coming out, it looks like, tomorrow.
I heard. Heard it, yep. Yeah, that's good news. That's good. You know, these old guys, I mean, they're such characters.
yeah.
Seriously. John Nichols and I had talked about we really need to get some of them together and get somebody to write down some of these stories and publish it because they are just hysterical getting these guys in a room together. Donnie Winfrey and Frank Mowbray and, you know, Eddie Johnson, all these guys. Merrill should have his own book.
Yes, yes.
Merrill had one of the best lines I ever heard on the backstretch. He was on the phone, obviously, with one of his owners, and he hung up the phone, and he turned around to a couple of us, and he said, "Man, I got to tell this guy, this game ain't for the owners. This game is for the jocks, the trainers, and the jock agents. He just pays the bills." He's brutally honest.
He's the best. The funniest part of yesterday's conversation, for those that either missed it or maybe you heard it this morning, was, you know, Gary popped two other brothers out. Came out. I said, "Who are these brothers that they jumped in at the quarter pole?" I didn't even know.
Yeah.
I thought I knew Merrill Jr. and of course Richie, rest in peace, and he's got Clay and he's got this one and they're at the sale. I went, wait a minute.
Right. Yeah, they're all over the place. Yep. It's crazy.
Well,
like
speaking
bad
of
trash. You can't get rid of it.
Before we go to stakes, I do want to ask you. You've got that fifth race maiden group, and I had Amos on the show, and he likes Wild for Wycliffe, but he admitted that, you know, Tulane Trist should be very, very tough. And then Marcus talked about Mr. Sippy, the Joe Sharp, the run happy for the Butts House.
Yeah, who's getting LASIKs for the first time, and Irad's jumping on. And from what I understand, he's been working with a couple of turf horses, the Sharps, Logical Myth and Summer in Saratoga, and getting the better of both of them. So I'm sure that horse is very live. I mean, Wild for Wycliffe, Amos's horse, looks, and like Tulane Trist, they're both very fast. And I got to think that they're going to set a legitimate pace in this race. I'm looking for two horses to improve off their first efforts. I happened to be at the track early in the meet when Cool House, the Cox horse, outworked Warrant from the gate, the horse that won that day. Warrant wound up having a start before that race that he beat Cool House. And I got a feeling that Cool House was given one in this race and is going to run a lot better with Giroux on him tomorrow. It's going to get a good setup, too. And I don't think it'd be as far back. And I think Calhoun's horse, Continental Coins, will move forward, too. Off that first effort. This race is loaded. Absolutely loaded. It's a great race.
5-4. 5-4.
Five over 2, 4, and 8 would be my numbers. But, I mean, listen, if Tom's horse would get loose for some reason, he's capable. I don't know much about Asmussen's first-time starter, but I'm sure he's capable, too. It's tough. Very tough.
How about the Louis Russell? He's got that $500,000. He and Ronnie Lamarck have got that $500,000 American Pharaoh.
Right. Yep. And Giroux took that mount first time out. I think that's noticeable. That race originally was on the turf, came off. And Hot Stove League is an Amos horse that beat him, who had once, I think early in his career, he ran for maiden 30, but he really was better than that. So that was a solid race that they came out of. And then, you know, Hidden Enemy clearly has the numbers to win, but that running style always lends itself to some traffic troubles, but Irad jumps on, so he's got a shot. And then I wouldn't leave out Cox with Snowhouse, who has been working with a couple of good horses. He worked with that horse Gaslight back on February 28th, who ran second at Oaklawn in his first start.
As we turn to the stakes, Frank McGoey's with us, and I do have to mention, for those of you that have been riding the Long Shot Lad, he's done it again, closing out on Gold Cup Day, 33-1, Belfast Banner should put you in good stead going into the weekends. Tremendous job by Kev with his unbelievable. Every Ascot, every Cheltenham, He finds one of these, and 33-1. Not only did Belfast Banner win this, he won it going away in a absolutely, I mean, just a hair-raising finish that going to pay close to $70 here in the second at Cheltenham. Good job, Kev. How about that?
How do we get Kev some TPs for the fairgrounds for tomorrow?
He's
still got time to dig in.
He's, you know, Kev's a kid. You'll love this. This is a kid that we started showing up. Basically, I either found my website or some of my guys from Derby Trail found him at the racetrack, and he would come to Breeders' Cups, he'd come to Triple Crown races, he'd come to Saratoga just on his own. He worked for either Bank of Ireland or you know some big financial concern right out of uni, and just the nicest kid, Kev Humphreys, and he started to. You know, we just would start to see him regularly, and he became part of the scene. And I started having him on about 5-6 years ago. He always had a great opinion, and he's got a long shot look. That's his, you know, he's not, you know, he understands if there's going to be some dominant types. But on these cards, he has had a knack of just following, you know, horses that might be Cheltenham specialty types or, you know, whatever it is. It's amazing. So here's a 33-1 winner that sends everybody home happy.
I think that's an important part of finding success in this game as a bettor is finding what you're good at, finding your niche, and having the confidence to stick with it.
We got a couple of stakes in the middle of the card, Frank. Let's slip these in because I didn't get a chance. No parole got referenced by Marcus Hirsch, but we didn't really flesh out the Costa Rising and the Crescent City Derby. But it just so happens I had Maggie Moss on the other day and Amos, and here's No Parole taking advantage again of state bred conditions.
Yeah, I mean, if he takes to the turf, he'll win. It looks like he's got some turf breeding. And so, I mean, he's just better than these. It's that simple. He's quicker. He's going to put him on a lead and probably just go about his business. That comeback race at Delta was impressive, and he finished like he had something left. I mean, you know where he's going with Saez, right to the top, and I doubt they'll be able to catch him. X-Clown had some trouble in his last race, and Monty Man, oh, he's getting a little long in the tooth, but he still shows up, and I'm sure Ron will have him cranked up for a good effort. But he's definitely the horse to beat.
No doubt. How about in the
Crescent
Derby?
Derby.
Yeah.
Yeah, this looks like a lockbox to me. And here, you know, who took the money, handled all the horses the other day very easily in his first two-turn race. He looked great that day doing it. Finished like he had something left. I guess Brett's intention was to get a two-turn race in him before this 100,000 race because that's pretty quick back for Brett, March 6, running him right back, but he finished like he'll have another one in him. And I hear that Steve Swash unanimously has been training with Superstock, the horse he sent over to Saudi Arabia, and I think he could probably expect a forward move out of him. And I think those are the two top threats in here. I don't see that much else in here that can beat those two.
Nice. 2-7 in the Crescent City Derby. That leads us up to the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, the all-stakes pick five. And obviously the two turf races that we talked about earlier with Marcus, those are going to be, you know, the real problematic spots in terms of ticket building. Let's do it in order and talk about the Benson.
So I kind of decided that I was more against a set of horses than I was really for anybody in this race. There's too many question marks in me on a lot of these horses to really be in love with anybody, but I just decided that I'm going to be against the entire Delica race, the Alstall Memorial. The field was bunched up that day at the wire. I think Delica has been a little in and out in her career. I don't have a total confidence in her. And, you know, the horse that really should have won that day, Joy Epiflora, she really has no turf form at all before that race, and she was clearly going to win without trouble in the race. Past the Plate, who's coming out of that race, that was his first time facing all the horses, and he managed to run third. I'm suspect of the quality of the entire field. So I'm looking to duck that race totally. I'm also tossing Russian Mafia, who, like I told somebody, the Russian Mafia would have to fix this race for him to win. And And catch a bid was beyond awful at Sam Houston the other day. If he runs back to his numbers, I guess he could be okay when Chad had him those numbers. But I'm going to have to see it in the Sharp Barn before I would go back to him. So that left me with no strong opinion, but the 2, 4, 5, 10, 11, and 13 I'll be using in some type of fashion in picks. But not a strong opinion in this race at all. Very tough. I would say I do think that Winning Envelope has been running 5.5, and that's way too short. I think that horse will improve with the added distance. And Winner Sunset has looked good. I mean, it's real easy when you're at the track to see Winner Sunset because she stands out, that Greg. And she looks good. She's not without a chance at a big price in here.
Takes us to the start of the late pick four, the New Orleans Classic. Roadster away a year and comes back in the hands of Stidham, whose whole profile has, you know, really elevated Mike Stidham. And as steady a, you know, an outfit as he's offered for years and years, he and Hillary, he has really, I think, in fact, somebody, I don't know if Marcus wrote a piece or somebody wrote a piece in DRF that, I mean, these are heady times for the Stidham Barn, and they get a horse that, you know, has certainly faced quality in his career, and he's still only 5, only 11 starts, not a lot of mileage on those tires.
Right, right. And, you know, the work pattern in this horse is something you don't usually see from Stidham. Three full-on works in a row. From what I understand, one of them was a 5-ace work that they gave him the gallop out on, but he's leaning on this horse pretty hard. I'm guessing he's probably going to need one off this long a layoff. And I don't know what everybody else's take that you've talked to is, but I just don't see a whole ton of pace in this race.
And we did talk about this.
Yeah. Dallas is riding Luis Saez. He's, that's not the guy that you leg up and say, hey, you know, let him fall back to last and make a run. I got to think he's going to be in the mix early.
I agree.
And I got to think that Giroux is not going to let anybody get away. And so I see those two lining up early, and I wouldn't be surprised if they went around the track 1-2, 2-6, or 6-2 in some fashion. Owendale, you know, everybody, I think most people think of him as closer, but his pace figures aren't that far off being up close in this race because there's really no pace in here.
I completely agree, and I'm glad you zeroed in on Louis because I thought that him getting on as opposed to, you know, no knock on James Graham at all, but he's got sort of a turf rider mentality.
Yep.
Those races
did last time he rode him.
Exactly. And when you look at those races, the two at Churchill and then when at the early in the Fairgrounds meet, he's got some speed, and he has always shown the ability to at least attend the pace. And there isn't anybody. I suppose Rosario is good at it. Bridgemahan is very good at it. And Leperu, too. But you put Luis Saez on the front end of a slow-paced group, and he will absolutely strangle everybody. And then when they turn for home, about two-thirds into the turn, he will quicken away from the field, and everybody else goes into panic mode. I love the way Saez rides those opportunities.
And even if Giroux makes the lead on him, if he hustles the two early, I don't think they'd be going fast enough that it wouldn't be a pretty moderate pace, and I'd always rather be the outside stalker in that pace than the inside one that's being stalked. So I think the post position advantage goes to Chess Chief, and the pace is going to help him too. You know,
6-2, 2-6 for Frank. Let's talk about the Muniz because Marcus and I, we probably could have spent a half an hour on this race. What a good group this is.
It is a good group. I think they're or three horses that really kind of look head and shoulders above the rest to me. One, because of the pace scenario, it looks like Factor This isn't going to – well, he definitely doesn't have to deal with the Baker horse. I can't remember the name, but the one he's been fighting with a couple of times on a lead.
Spectacular Jim,
correct, thank you. But he fooled with him last time, and he was pressed inside on that heavy-yielding turf course. and it'll be fast and firm tomorrow with the rails down. So, and Sean rides his horse the same way. He's going to let him rip. He's going to have him close to the pace, and he's probably going to be on the lead turning for home. And if you get, you know, a forward movement off that last race, he's going to be very tough. And then you got the two coming out of the Pegasus World Cup, Colonel Liam and Cross Border, who I thought were both good. But Colonel Liam saved all the ground in that race. He got a fantastic trip. And Cross Border was just the opposite. He was definitely hampered by his position on the track. And I think with the long stretch at the fairgrounds, he's got a shot to flip the script on Colonel Liam. So those would be my top three, but the two other horses at a price that I think may be able to get a piece. If anybody hasn't watched Two Emmys last race, I suggest they do. His two-back race on January 15th here, he held off a really good horse of Cox's that's up-and-coming called Durain, who came back last Saturday and handled the field with ease. And I'm thinking his next start will be at a 2X or a stake at Keeneland, Durain. And Two Emmys last race on March 7th, this horse was never able to get any run, was bottled up the entire race. And when they hit the wire, was absolutely loaded. So I think that horse has a shot to hit the board at a price. And then Pixelate was another one who did. Zayas rode him. He was able to tuck in a little bit at Gulfstream and save some ground. But he's going to enjoy this stretch at the fairgrounds. And of his two starts here, he's a win in a second. So I put them as underneath, but I think 1, 4, and 5 are the top three players in the race.
Excellent. That that helps because when it comes to these pick five and pick four tickets, it's going to be a little tricky. It does feel as we get to the three-year-olds, Frank McGooey with us, everybody, and the Oaks and the Derby. It's pretty evident who the top candidates are. How do we separate them?
I'm not sure that you will. I think Clairiere and Travel Column will probably both move forward off those first efforts of the year. And with that being said, and the seven lengths between the horses that were behind them, I don't see those making up the difference. I don't know what your take is, but I was not visually impressed with the Pletcher horse, either race, really. I was impressed with the Mott horse, and I got a funny story. I asked Mike Deliberto if he had seen the Mott horse on the track, and he realized he had when I said, I said, she's a gray, and she looks like she's got some size to it. He said, Donnie Winfrey, he told me, oh, look, Mott brought Tacitus here. And Mike said he told Donnie, no, Tacitus didn't run in here. And then that's when it hit Mike, it must have been this filly, obligatory. So she must be quite a physical presence if they thought she could be confused with Tacitus. So I think she's a horse that looks like she had some significant trouble at Gulfstream and kind of got bottled up and then was able to start again and look like a horse with a big stride that'll appreciate two turns. I don't see anybody other than obligatory Clairiere and Travel Column. Well, I think one of those will win. Little Tootsie has been good the last two starts, but, you're taking away the Lasix tomorrow and much tougher field. I think she's up against it tomorrow.
Finally, Frank, let's talk about this Derby. And when I closed out with Marcus, I kind of said that it feels like we're going to look at this chart later in the summer, and there's going to be horses that were up the track tomorrow that end up doing some nice things later in their career, whether it's at 7/8 or whatever. This is a really nice group, top to bottom.
It really is. And you got a lot, like you said, there's a lot of horses that look like they've got a lot of room for improvement. Mandaloon already took that step forward, in my opinion, when he put the blinkers on last time. And he got a little extra distance. Just look much more focused, much more professional. And I think that'll serve him well, and I think he'll like the added distance tomorrow at a mile and 3/16. I clearly think he's the horse to beat. I clearly think he's going to get that trip that we're seeing Giroux so happy with the last couple years in these big races. Just sitting out there with somebody inside as their target and he's going to pull the trigger, and that horse looks fantastic. He's going to fire tomorrow. There's no doubt about it. He's going to show up. You got a horse like Hot Rod Charlie, who is no substitute for the experience he's got. That last race in between two horses, fighting to the wire, will serve him well. And just watching his last two works on XBTV, he looks tremendous. Looks like he's doing really good. And then you've got an up-and-coming horse like Run Classic, who, you know, it's funny. I had seen Brett before this horse made his first start on January 16th in the 6 furlong race. And I told him, I said, I hear you got a horse that, you know, is really okay. And he said, yeah. He said, go check him out in the paddock. He said, this one hole's not going to do him any favors, and he's a really big horse. He's going to want two turns. And Steve, when I went and looked at him, I mean, this horse, he doesn't look like a Run Happy. He's gorgeous. He's big. Well, I mean, not that Run Happy wasn't good looking, but he looks just so long, big striding horse. He's good. He's no way he's going to get that trip he got last time, sitting outside stalking inferior horses that just physically couldn't beat him. But he's going to take another step forward, and he's one, like you said, that maybe down the line he's going to be somebody that's got to be dealt with. And Proxy, the blinkers will probably help Proxy too. Looked like he got a little bit left last time on the turn, like just wandered about and was kind of looking about down the lane. He'll probably pick it up too. So it's those four, in my mind, the main contenders, but I clearly think Mandaloon is the horse to beat.
Well, and you sound awfully confident, actually, when you lay it out.
Yeah, I'm pretty opinionated on these horses.
Well,
it gets me in trouble sometimes.
Well, no, listen, it's a game of strong opinions. I'm glad you discussed and have affection for Run Classic, who I thought, you know, obviously he's going to have to take another step forward, but.
Mike tell me he's working really good. Said his last two works have both been solo, but he's working really good. He's got he's got a huge stride. Oh, he covers so much ground. He's really a good looking horse. I'm always pulling for Brett.
And you know, Brian Hernandez Jr., who's probably the single most underrated top level rider in the country. He's effective, particularly effective on this kind of a horse.
Quietly getting better and better. I'm looking at an autographed picture of his winning the Breeders' Cup, and that seems like that was so long ago on Fort Larned. He continues to get better and better. He really is a good rider.
Frank McGoey, always a pleasure, and we're going to see you. We're going to see you when? Before Vegas?
I'm not going to be in Vegas. I did not qualify. I didn't.
No.
I took a couple of chances. Yeah, I didn't take that many chances. I'm going to see you somewhere. I know that. I'll be back at Saratoga. If they let me back in there, I'll be there. I'll see you.
We're going to be okay. Yeah, it's going to happen.
Good deal.
It's going to happen.
Good deal. I'm looking
Frank,
forward to it.
A pleasure, and good luck tomorrow. Good luck going forward, and we'll talk and we'll see you soon.
All right. Good luck to everybody. Thanks, Steve.
Frank McGoey, everybody, and you're talking about a pro player and somebody who puts in all the time and effort. And our next guest does as well from the other side of the aisle, Jay Pribman, the Daily Racing Form national correspondent. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent, and we're deep in the weeds on this fairgrounds card. I mean, we literally have discussed all 14 races here for the last hour and 10 minutes.
Well,
pretty funny.
Everybody will be well versed and ready to go for to make some money tomorrow,
or confused, one or the other. Jay,
were you handicapping too?
I was sort of interjecting. Oh. I was. Okay. Interfumfering, as the grandmother would say.
Right.
Before we get to this weekend, we got plenty in the rearview mirror. And for those that did not read your recap from last weekend and the Rebel, and if they have missed Derby Watch and updates, some thoughts about concert tour and where we go from here.
So that was the one point scoring race last week, and it was the one
race to impact our Derby watch top 20. Basically, Marty and I decided we brought in Hozier owing to his second place finish in the race, and we removed Caddo River. We weren't particularly enamored of his performance. Obviously, Concert Tour was very good, leading from start to finish. We've talked on your show about how his career so far has been a mirror image of that of Nadal's last year, winning first time out, sprinting at Santa Anita, coming back 3 weeks later and winning the 7-furlong San Vicente, and then going to Oaklawn and making his first start around two turns in the Rebel. And like Nadal, he won all three. Nadal last year didn't run again until the postponed Arkansas Derby. At least this year, Concert Tour is going to run an Arkansas Derby that'll be in the spot it's supposed to be. But I thought he was very good. I thought the first furlong of the race kind of told the tale of the race. You had California sprint speed against Midwest route speed, and Concert Tour's early speed, I thought, put Caddo River into a tough spot going into the first turn because he just wasn't as quick away from the gate. And at that point, I thought Giroux had two choices to make. He could either gun inside and try and go up and force things with Concert Tour, or just take back and get a stalking trip, which I actually thought was the correct decision at that point. And I just thought Caddo River wasn't good enough. To me, that was a spot you'd want to be, stalking second outside of Concert Tour. You certainly don't want to go head-to-head with a horse with that kind of speed and be drawn inside him. So I thought it was the right move. I thought he ended up in a good spot, and he was done by the top of the stretch. So we got rid of him, even though he finished in front of Keep Me In Mind. I'm not a huge fan of Keep Me In Mind. Marty's a little more bullish on him than I am. But in fairness to him, even though he finished behind Caddo River, it was his first start of the year, and he had been based at Oaklawn and was compromised by the freeze they had there and didn't train for a week and a half. So he had a legitimate, more of a legitimate excuse to not run well than Caddo River did. So that was why, even though Keep Me In Mind finished behind Caddo River, we collectively agreed to leave Keep Me In Mind on and take Caddo River off. So that's those were the Derby watch developments and my thoughts on the Rebel.
Excellent. Well, likelihood we keep hearing there was a couple of tidbits that came out of Oaklawn. We'll talk to Hammer in a little bit, but a couple of things I saw where Deodoro more or less committed toward Arkansas Derby with Keep Me In Mind and staying there, the likeliest option for him and somebody else whom I think somebody else Jay made motion that they would was it Cox
I think
that
you'll
said
see Concert Tour, you know, Caddo River and Keep Me In Mind all come back in the Arkansas
right.
Derby among others, but they're, you know, they'll all be there. I mean, you know, and who knows if you know, maybe Prevalence ends up there. You know, that's
right,
still waiting to see exactly where he goes. So those are among the ones, and I'm sure there'll be a second Baffert horse there because he's running out of spots to give there. He's going to have two runners in some of these races because he's got enough overlap, you know, with horses like Hozier and Spielberg. You know, they're going to need to run against Life Is Good and Concert Tour somewhere, probably. So
exactly. In fact, I think when he was with us, when Baffert was with us, was it Monday? I think Spielberg he did in fact hint that Spielberg might end up in Arkansas. So well, you know how he plays that. He'll dish him out as we get closer. Well, an amazing development when it comes to Gary and Mary West, Jay. You know, to have bred and sold Life Is Good, and then to, you know, pull this rabbit out of the hat as well with Concert Tour.
Well, yeah, they bred both horses. You know, they sold Life Is Good as a yearling, and kept Concert Tour. So, you know, to have bred, you know, two of the top contenders for this year's Derby is a pretty amazing accomplishment. You know, they're trying to be more into the you know, more of a viable breeding operation in terms of, you know, selling quality horses. And if you want people to take you seriously in that endeavor, you have to sell some horses that have some potential, and you know that's what they decided to do with Life Is Good, while keeping the horse that turned out to be Concertor. I mean, at the time, their yearlings haven't even all they've done is walk at that point. It's not like they've ever trained or anything like that, but obviously they've both turned out to be to be top quality colts.
We'll see how that sidebar unfolds. And one other storyline that you always include a feature each week with the any changes around Derby Watch, and you found your way to Joel Rosario and Ron Anderson's fairly uncanny ability to be finding live mounts, both in the short, intermediate, and long term.
Yeah, Rosario, for about 6 or 7 straight Saturdays, he's going to be going somewhere to ride in a Derby prep, and not staying in the same place 2 consecutive weeks. He was at Oaklawn and Santa Anita, back to Oaklawn. This week he's at the Louisiana Derby. Next week he's going to be in Dubai. Then he comes back and he'll either be at Santa Anita or Keeneland the first weekend in April. And then obviously he'd return to Oaklawn for the Arkansas Derby for Concert Tour. But they're just trying to have as many options as possible and see who continues on. The first horse they rode was in the Southwest. In that streak was Jackie's Warrior, and he just proved he wasn't he's not a Derby type contender. But Concert Tour certainly did, and they're hoping that Hot Rod Charlie can show that he's of that quality tomorrow in the Louisiana Derby. And he's, tell you what, he's trained out here like he's gonna give the locals all they can handle. I'm kind of torn on him because I thought the way the race shaped up last time that he was in the Robert Lewis, it was kind of fast, early, slow, late. And I thought he ran well, but I thought the race shape kind of flattered his style. That said, it was his first start since the Breeders' Cup. He's getting more distance to work with tomorrow. And I just have been really impressed with his series of drills coming out of the race. So I think, shockingly, Ron Anderson has found yet another live ticket for Rosario, in addition to having John Velasquez on proxy and winning the Derby last year with Velasquez with Authentic. So he continues to put his riders in pretty darn good spots.
Amazing. And since we launched into it a little bit, flesh out your complete Louisiana Derby thoughts.
Well, I was surprised it only got 8 horses for $1 million. A track that a lot of people will ship into. I was really surprised that it didn't get more representation, but maybe that's just because the local strength at the top has been so good. Mandolin's obviously very highly regarded and deservedly so. His race in the Risen Star was terrific, and Proxy's banged out a couple of excellent efforts there and adds blinkers tomorrow, similar to what Mandolin did last time. And if it has the same effect on Proxy that it did on Mandolin, and he moves forward, he's a win candidate regardless, but that might even give him that little extra oomph to get over the hump. And Midnight Bourbon's run 2 good races. He beat both those colts in the LeCompte, and he was a respectable 3rd last time. And you've got 3 others out of the Risen Star all coming back, and then just 2 newcomers, Hot Rod Charlie and then Run Classic, who's lightly raced but certainly has shown a lot of promise for Brett Calhoun, who won the race a couple of years ago with By My Standards. So it's a good race. And it's the mile and 3/16 was the first time it was run at that distance last year. But Brad Cox was saying that he was kind of skeptical on the lengthening of the distances of the Risen Star and the Louisiana Derby last year. But then he ended up winning both races with 2 different horses. And we'll see if Mandaloon can win both races for him this year. He'd certainly like the same horse to win both races.
No doubt. And, given the rest of the card, too, big opportunity for Judmont on this card with Obligatory in the Oaks, too, for the girls. So Mott coming in. on that front. Well, any of the interlopers and you know, upstarts have any appeal? I think we talked about Run Classic coming out of Risen Star Day, and you know how impressive he was coming stepping forward.
So his race was good. He's just giving up so much.
Yeah,
and he's only had two runs, and he's running against very good horses. So I think it's a pretty tall order for him. He deserves a chance, but it's not like he's running against a group of suspect horses. The big three coming out of the Risen Star are quite good, and like I was saying before, I think Hot Rod Charlie's sitting on a big race tomorrow.
The Louisiana Derby, and for the second year, being run at the Preakness Distance, so an early read beyond a mile and an eighth, and that's absolutely going to be part of the story. It should be fun, and the conclusion of a deep, full card, little of everything, maidens and state breds and boys, girls, grass and long and short, every little of everything. And of course, next week, look ahead to Florida Derby and to and Dubai UAE Derby and Turfway on the synthetic as well.
See, now 100 point to the winner, Jeff Ruby.
Yeah, and I have not seen a lot of indication yet of who to expect. So we'll
I think you'll see the Battaglia principles right back in action.
And I guess Ron Bauer was a consideration too from Michael McCarthy and the Fratkins. So we'll we've got a full day next week, and the UAE Derby. I know O'Neill's got the one, and they had the declarations earlier in the week. We'll look forward to what really has become a traditional big Saturday, starting with Dubai and then into Florida Derby Day as well. And that usually these two weekends, Jay, this pretty much, man your battle stations from here to the first Saturday in May.
Yeah, I really enjoy that first Saturday in April card, with the Bluegrass and the Santa Anita Derby. I mean, those are terrific races. But you're right. I mean, now these are all the final round of preps. All the 170 point races are starting, the Louisiana Derby being the first of them tomorrow, and then following right after that with all these other ones we've been mentioning, Florida Derby, now that the Jeff Ruby has been upgraded, now that Churchill Downs owns Turfway. So they've increased the point value of that, looking out for the home team there. Sandy the Derby, Wood, Arkansas Derby, Bluegrass, all those races have giant point values.
Well, you mentioned Santa Anita too, and good spot, Jay, to mention the news that came midweek about Del Mar. Very encouraging, and got people excited about attendance opportunities. And then Santa Anita followed with a system they're going to put in place for reservations and some attendance starting on the day before, right on April 2nd. So everybody's so eager to get back to the racetrack.
Yeah, it's nice to see things trending that way, and certainly be welcome to see fans back at San Anita, even in a limited capacity. There's a whole sign-up process that they need to go through, and Steve Anderson outlined it for us in the story that he wrote that you can find at drf.com. But it'll be nice to just have fans back at the race, especially for a Kentucky, major Kentucky Derby prep that's going to have an exciting horse like Life Is Good in it. It'd be nice for people to be able to go out to the races for the fans, at least. Owners have been able to go, but for fans to be able to see racing in California for the first time in a year, it's kind of, we've taken a lot of things for granted, I think, over the last year, or realized that we take a lot of things for granted over the last year. So it'd be nice to be able to see that. And then, like you said, a couple of days ago, Del Mar announced that they're going to be able to have, they're expecting to have fans this summer too. They haven't announced what percentage it'll be at, and it's obviously just going to be predicated on what happens over the next 4 months in terms of, you know, how things progress with the pandemic. You know, the better things go in California and specifically San Diego County, the larger, I'm sure, the percentage of capacity they'll be able to do. But the 1st of April was already announced in this state that baseball teams could start having fans at limited capacity, and that Santa Anita was just waiting for that to happen and just sort of piggyback on that, because it's like, hey, we're an outdoor sporting event too. So they just let the Dodgers and Angels and Padres and, you know, and A's and Giants, but specifically the Dodgers, since they're in LA County, be the pulling guard, and then they follow right behind them, as they should. It's nice that it'll happen.
Yeah, agreed. And next week we'll check in New York too. Naira continues to monitor everything, and you know the fact that Yankees and Mets are going to be able to open the season with some attendance, that really bodes well for Belmont and then Saratoga. So knock on wood, it's happening and it's going good. Jay, that pretty much covers the on racetrack news. In off racetrack, you and I had talked during the week, and one of the stories that's obviously dominated certainly getting plenty of attention and coverage of different kinds, the HISA development, and then this week the HBPA filing a lawsuit against, and I was curious how I haven't really canvassed you on this topic. I was curious, how you think, directionally, how this is playing out.
Well, I mean, I don't know how it's going to play out. I thought the best encapsulation of the issue and the scope of everything was when Sid was on your show the other day and just laid out, all the legal ramifications of it. I thought in an extremely logical and coherent manner. The one thing I'm not as well versed in the law as he is, but I thought he really, calmly and rationally explained, what the actual law entails at the moment and what the objection is. And I thought the one thing that he most notably hit on, and I would expand on, is Lasix, and that's what a lot of the a lot of the trainers are still fighting for, is to keep Lasix. And the one thing that's happened in this entire debate regarding medication is that Lasix has become conflated with drugs that are clearly illegal to use and are performance enhancing. And it's just sort of been lumped into the same soup over the years by people who want it conflated that way. And I think that's grossly unfortunate. We've seen over the years that Lasix has shown in many cases to be an effective, reasonable use for horses who bleed. And there's need for it in many cases. I mean, we had a Kentucky Oaks winner just a couple of years ago who bled terribly in the Fairgrounds Oaks in her race, in her last prep, and came back and used Lasix and won the Kentucky Oaks. And, that's just an example, a Serengeti Empress. It's a medication that has been shown over the years to be effective at what it's supposed to do. And that's what, as Sid pointed out, trainers are still, the HBPA, that's the one aspect of this that they're most notably fighting. And it's just all been lumped into the same thing as though it's elephant shoes. And it's just not. And that's, the people who are behind pushing the legislation through, I think, have done an effective job of really, muddying the waters, but it's to the detriment of the sport, I think. And the one thing I'll you know, say, I'd like people to see if this resonates with them. One of the best things I ever heard about the humane use of Lasix and why it's necessary was by John Sheriffs, who I think everybody would agree has a lot of integrity as a trainer. There's no questions about, is he trying to take an edge? Does he take it to the limit and you know, with being aggressive with medication and things like that? I mean, he's everybody knows that's not how he operates. And I remember having a discussion with him several years ago about Lasix, and his argument is he thinks it's inhumane to not use it, to allow a horse who you know will bleed without it to bleed, and that it has efficacy and use, and that it should be allowed in those kinds of cases. And that to me is what's been lost in this, you know, very pitched argument over trying to have the rules that are trying to be put forth here. It's that specific medication, I think, has really been, for lack of a better word, it's been abused in the public domain in terms of how it's been perceived by those who are trying to get legislation, you know, across the threshold.
Hmm. Appreciate it. I wanted to ask. Long ways to go on those on this. And I suppose we're supposed to fairly soon have the first round, the recommendations from the committee about what would make up the steering groups essentially. So it'll let those stories unfold. Jay, Louisiana Derby gets the sole baby spotlight. Looking forward to tomorrow.
The king baby of
yes,
the king cake of find the baby, the king cake of Derby preps this week.
Exactly right. And if there is a baby to be found in the king cake, Tina will find it. I never get it.
Yes.
It's unbelievable. She's 3 for 3. King cake babies. At some point, I get nothing. Ugats for me. Garnished. That too. Jay, have a great weekend. Looking forward to the trio of conversation for next week. And one place for your Derby Watch coverage, America's Turf Authority, the Daily Racing Forum, since
Marty McGee came on board. It all started then.
1894. Jay, I appreciate it. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, Steve.
Jay Brimman, everybody, and Thoroughbred LA tomorrow. Don't forget, join Jay for that. Let's take our only break of the morning, and we've got just tons to do. We've got Scully and DeRosa. We've got Hammer, Nick Tamaro, and Popo, and supposed to slip in a Mike Welch visit, too, to get a little bit of Gulfstream. Technically, we could live by fairgrounds alone. I got to mention, after Kev scores in the second at Cheltenham, Nick Luck, for those of you who took pen in hand and kept track, Nick Luck gave out Vanillier 17-1. 17-1 just now in the third, in the Albert Bartlett Novice Hurdle. Great job, Nick. Let's take a break, our only of the morning, and come back. Second half plus lots of coverage. Stay with us.